This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to another Joy 94.9 podcast.
In this Joycast, you'll hear a summary of the weekly program. Due to copyright restrictions, the music has been edited out to make this Joycast possible.
For more information about the music played during the show, please visit the blog at joy.org.au/The Fool and the Opera.
Good evening and welcome to another episode of The Fool and the Opera. It is a lovely afternoon of music that I've got for you lined up, so do stick around. First of all, I've got to say thank you to the crew from behind the scenes for another fantastic show. Thanks, of course, to Vito, Penelope and Bill for a wonderful show. Now, coming up today, we have got Emancipated Farmers, Expressive Floors and Enchanted Forests. We will be speaking with Cheryl Barker. I'm so lucky and so happy to have caught up with her. So Cheryl Barker will be on the show today. She'll be talking about quite a few things, mostly the Bundelea Forest Weekend, which she'll be performing at soon, but also a few interesting things like taking risks in opera and allowing for, you know, the flaws in music making, just because it shouldn't be more important to be perfect than it should be to be emotional and get that emotional communicated across. So it's going to be an interesting interview, which is worth sticking around for. I'm also going to be playing a few very, I suppose, African-American inspired pieces, because sadly we heard this week, that Anne Brown, who was the original Bess from Gershwin's opera Porgy and Bess, passed away. So we'll be playing quite a bit of music from African-American performers, which will be very interesting. It's a topic that I'm not too well-versed with, and so certainly, this is the whole premise of the show. It is The Fool and the Opera, and from the position, the starting position of The Fool, it certainly makes it a lot easier to learn. So we're going to basically do that today. I would love to get your feedback if you've got some. SMS 0427 JOY949, or you can email onair@joy.org.au. You can give us a call as well, 9699 2949. Happy to answer the calls during a track or whatnot. But today, to start off, you know that I always like to start with a bit of an interesting track, one that you wouldn't expect. And today I've picked a spiritual. It's a very interesting one because I listened to it. I couldn't help but just laugh out loud at several points. And the audience does have a lot of fun listening to it and watching it. And I really wish I could have been there. But it's from a 1990 concert that had Jesse Norman and Kathleen Battle, two very prominent African-American opera performers. And it's called Scandalize My Name. You're on The Fool and the Opera on Joy 94.9.
I met my preacher the other day. Give him my right hand. But just as soon as ever my back was turned,
truly,
he scandalized my name. Now do you call that a preacher? Now do you call that a preacher?
You are on The Fool and the Opera on Joy 94.9, and I said that we'd be talking about a topic that is a little bit different, a bit new for me, so we're going to go with it slowly, and hopefully if you've got any contributions to make, you certainly can by SMSing 0427 JOY949 or emailing onair@joy.org.au. Now, that really excitingly fun track that we just heard, Scandalize My Name, was performed by Jesse Norman and Kathleen Battle at Carnegie Hall in the 90s. And the two performers are incredibly popular in the opera scene, and I've only just recently come across them. I was put onto them by Kathleen Battle in particular. I was only told about last week by Les, who is the father of Jed, our audio producer, and she's an amazing singer, and I'm just starting to get into her music, and it's really beautiful stuff. And when you look at those two performers who were born in the mid-40s, and by the time that they graduated, which was around about the mid-60s, they'd kind of just caught on the tail end of the civil rights movement, and it's really great to see that they were able to make a name for themselves in the opera world, because they really were standing on the shoulders of giants. Because before that, before they came along, there were a few other opera performers who really had a difficult time actually cracking it in the business because of pre-50s. There was, you know, segregation and discrimination, oppression, exploitation of African Americans was still quite prevalent. So the fact that we have, you know, Jessie Norman, who is a wonderful singer, and the fact that she's one of the most highly paid classical performers in the opera world is quite amazing. So we are talking about the civil rights movement because Anne Brown this week, who is the original Bess from Porgy and Bess, the opera that Gershwin wrote, and his only opera, which is based on a little place called Catfish Row, which is set where, you know, basically a little place where all the blacks came to live. And it's an interesting opera that was written in the 30s. And it was written at a time where, you know, as I said, pre-50s, the racial discrimination still exists and all that sort of stuff. And Anne Brown, who was the original Bess, actually was doing quite well for herself in terms of building her name in the community, because she was the first African American who was introduced to was admitted into Juilliard, and she managed to get in at the age of 16. And by the time that she was 23, she was doing Porgy and Bess, and she introduced herself to Gershwin, and he basically fell so madly in love, not in terms of like a relationship love, but just in love with her voice and the way that she conducted herself, that he actually turned Bess from this like small character within the story, which, because it's based on a book, into a major character within the opera. Previously, it was just known as Porgy. When Anne Brown came along, it turned into Porgy and Bess. So really, she put the Bess in Porgy and Bess. But before we talk a little bit more about her, I wanted to basically set the political tone for you. And there's a wonderful piece that I've got, which I've been wanting to play for quite a while. It's by an artist named Odetta. And she was around in the she's a very inspiring character, and she was a very important figure in the American folk music revival of the 1950s and 60s. And indeed, her nickname is the voice of the civil rights movement. And she was born in the 30s. And by the time that she was performing, you know, she was able to sort of convey via music some really beautiful and touching stories. She was, of course, operatically trained, as most people were. And the song that she sings is called Another Man... Another Man Done Gone, which is about, of course, a very sad and it's a very tragic part of America's history, almost a despicable part of America's history, which was the chain gangs that existed. And basically, black prisoners from the South were chained together and then made to work on the American transportation system, work on rails and that sort of thing. So this song is a very touching song, which I first heard when Complexions, the ballet company, came out to Melbourne to perform it. And if you imagine when you're listening to the song, three performers, and I remember that one of them was a black performer as well, and they're in, I think they were in overalls, pretty sure they were, and dancing together, because it's a story of brothers who were on a chain gang together. When you just sort of picture that, this very, I suppose, very jerky movements, but also very, very passionate, because they were brothers, but they were also imprisoned within this sort of like little structure that they could not get out of. So this is Another Man Done Gone. You're on The Fool and the Opera on Joy 94.9.
Another man done gone. Another man done gone. Another man done gone from the collar farm. Another man done gone.
You're on The Fool and the Opera on Joy 94.9, and that, I think, is an incredible piece. It is just, it just really touches the heart of your soul. If your soul has a heart, that's where it touches, I think. And seeing that, I really was just almost pushed to the edge of tears. And, you know, I tend to cry a lot in operas and that sort of thing. Dance never really has moved me in such a way, but that particular piece, when I saw it done by Complexions, really just struck me. And, of course, it was sung by Odetta, who was trained in the classical mode and was set to become an opera singer. Her mother really wanted her to be an opera singer, but she thought that, you know, in the mid-50s, to have a large girl, a large black girl in opera would not be possible. So she, of course, moved towards more folk songs, and her music really inspired a whole generation of musicians, including people like Janis Joplin and Bob Dylan as well. So really touching stuff. And we're kind of moving backwards in time, I think, because we've played Jesse Norman and Kathleen Battle, who, you know, rose to prominence in the mid-60s. Odetta, who raised to prominence in the mid-50s. Before all of that, I suppose, we had Anne Brown. So now we're back to Porgy and Bess again. And Anne was, as I said before, she's quite amazing. At 16, she was able to get into Juilliard as the first African-American performer. And then at 23, she met Gershwin, and they worked together quite a bit to build on the role of Bess. And the show happened to actually do very well. So in 1935, when it was starting to tour, they were going to reach the year after that in 1936. They were going to go to Baltimore, which happens to be Anne's hometown. And the thing was, the town hall where they were going to perform at, the hall that they were going to perform at, still insisted on segregating blacks from whites. So they would split the hall up, and, you know, the blacks, of course, would sit in the back, and the whites would sit in the front. And Anne Brown and Todd Dunking, who were Bess and Porgy, respectively, from the opera Porgy and Bess, refused to perform at that hall because of that particular reason. And the amazing thing is, the management team relented, and they basically, for 1 week, for the first time in that city ever, blacks and whites sat shoulder to shoulder to watch Porgy and Bess. And I think that is quite an amazing achievement, the fact that they were able to make that change. And it is a bit of a small gesture, but it's a small gesture that is marked by that is a very significant achievement. So, and I think that when you think about life, that's the things that count. It's the small gestures with significant results that really matter. So it's an amazing thing that she did. And she did have some regrets, basically, that she was born in the time that she was born, because she said that if I was born 20 years later, I might have gone on to sing at the Metropolitan Opera. I might have marched for civil rights, and I would have been done there for all that, instead of, you know, leaving America where I could not build a career, and had going to Norway where my husband was. And she did, of course, admit, though, that Gershwin, she wouldn't have met Gershwin, of course, made her name for herself as Bess, but it is quite sad that at the time it was not possible to do that sort of thing. So for what she achieved, it was quite amazing. So our respects to Anne Brown and her family. And I'm going to play you a piece now. It's the overture from Porgy and Bess, which includes Summertime. And I'm going to play the bit after that, because not a lot of people hear that, which is going to be the second part of Summertime. So you're on The Fool and the Opera on Joy 94.9. On The Fool and the Opera on Joy 94.9, and that is, of course, the start of the fantastic opera Porgy and Bess, which was written by Gershwin in the mid-30s, prior to the civil rights movement. And it's a flawed opera, I'll admit that. It's, you know, it's got black people being portrayed as drug peddlers and prostitutes, and, you know, and clearly in that particular aria you can hear sexism running rampant with, you know, of course, women being nothing, no use except for to have children and raise children, and that's, of course, not true. And the opera, though, did manage to raise awareness about different issues, and also managed to achieve some very significant things, as we spoke about, you know, being able to really stop the segregation that was happening in halls and that sort of thing. So that for what it's worth, that is a good thing it's done. And, you know, I think that it's good to basically, let's finish up with a quote from Anne Brown. And she says that we tough girls tough it out. It's a very best thing to say. Excuse me. We tough girls tough it out. And it's great. So it's, you know, basically, I think that notion of you get to be the change that you want to be is a very important part of life. And if you are faced with, you know, something that you can't overcome, basically, it's to do with you start with yourself, and from there we can build on things. Now, we're going to go to a couple of important messages, and then we'll come back. And coming up, there is still the interview with Cheryl Barker. You're on The Fool and the Opera on Joy 94.9. You're on The Fool and the Opera on Joy 94.9. That was the Ode for the Birthday of Queen Anne with Kathleen Battle and Wynton Marsalis. Now, I thought that we'd play that track because it was, I think, a touching tribute to, of course, Anne Brown, who was Bess from Porgy Bess, the original Bess. So, my respects to her family, and may the... I don't know where I'm going to go with this. Okay, you're on The Fool and the Opera on Joy 94.9, and look, I was a bit starstruck this week when I caught up with Cheryl Barker, and I was incredibly excited to speak with her, and I spoke with her for quite a while as well. And we've only got, because we only play the highlights here on air, but if you want to catch the whole interview, this week we will be posting up an exclusive extended podcast of the interview. But for the time being, Cheryl Barker is going to be playing at Bundelier, the Forest Weekend, and we caught up with Cheryl Barker, and here are the highlights of that interview. Cheryl Barker is a shining star in the opera world. Without doubt, she's Australia's favourite Cho Cho San from Madame Butterfly, and certainly it's a role that she's well known for the world over. The lucky folks at the Bundelier Forest Weekend are in for a world-class treat when Cheryl will perform with Simon O'Neill at the Adelaide Symphony Orchestra. Thanks for joining me, Cheryl.
Thank you, a pleasure.
Now, I've never been to Bundelier, so can you give us an idea of what it will be like?
Well, I've never been to Bundelier either, I'd be just guessing. But from people that I've spoken to, they've all said it's an absolutely fantastic experience. And to, you know, be able to wander through this wonderful forest and hear music every corner that you turn, there's something happening. And then I'm doing a concert with Simon O'Neill, which I believe is in the forest somewhere on Saturday evening.
So what can we expect from this concert without giving too much away, I suppose?
Yeah, well, the repertoire is quite varied. So there's a bit of opera, there's some lighter music. Of course, it's with the Adelaide Symphony Orchestra, so you've got the added bonus of having a wonderful orchestra playing. Mm-hmm. So there'll be something for everybody, whether you're classically orientated or whether you prefer, you know, musicals or things like that.
Will there be highlights from Madame Butterfly?
There is. Without giving too much away, yes.
Now, when you're singing in a concert, for example, and singing Cho Cho San, versus when you're performing it as an opera, what are some of the differences that go through your mind when you're singing it?
Well, of course, you don't have the costume and the set, and you don't have the movements that you would have when you're performing an opera. So you have to imagine all those things, and so you still sing it in exactly the same way, but without the physical movements that you would have.
And without the costume and without those physical movements, does that actually affect the way that you feel about the piece?
Well, I think once you've done a role, that the memory of performing that role in situation is still in there. So hopefully, you know, you can emote the same emotions that you would whether you're on the stage or whether you're just standing stock still. It's about concentration of emotion, I think.
Mm. Now, I think 2009 is actually probably the 15th year that you've performed Cho Cho San.
Yes, the actual role is 15 years, yes. I've performed it in just about every conceivable way, because originally when it was written in 1904, it was much different to the version that people hear these days. There was a lot of music that was quite different, and I think there was probably about maybe even 40 minutes worth of music that's been cut out of it. And some of the vocal line is different as well. There's some characters that are omitted from the version that people see now than his original version, which I've done. I've done a partial version of the original, and I've done this version. So, And in English and in Italian, so I think I've covered all the bases with it.
Well, that's a fascinating sort of way to approach a role, having it in two languages.
Oh, yes. I mean, but when, I mean, as opera singers, we have to sing in very different languages. I'm at the moment, I'm preparing a role in Czech, which is Vietz Macropolis, which I'm doing in Amsterdam. So we have to, our poor brains are really tested.
I think that Moffat said that when you had your son Gabriel, that completely changed your reading of the opera itself as well.
I think it did. I mean, I always thought I understood what it was like to have a child, and I mean that's the tragic, great tragedy of this opera is the challenge for Butterfly, because at the end of the opera she has to give up her child, and of course then she decides that she can't live with Honor anymore, so she has to kill herself. And I had the great pleasure of a few years ago performing the role with Gabriel as the child in Butterfly with me in Houston. And I think it's been the highlight of my career to actually have him as a child on stage with me. It was fantastic.
And did he tell you how he felt about that as well?
He absolutely loved it. And the first day we got into the theatre, he said, "This is the best day of my life." But the trouble is, he was a little bit naughty on stage. And I gave him a kiss at one point and he wiped it off.
Oh.
And of course the audience laughed, and then at that stage he hadn't really taken much notice, but he suddenly looked at the audience and then of course he realised that he had them in the palm of his hand.
Well, it sounds like he's set for the stage then.
Oh, I think he could be, yes.
Do you think there's a chance that young Gabriel might pick up the operatic bug?
I wouldn't be surprised if he's more into jazz than certainly he has a very good voice and he sings in a little choir that we have locally, and he's studying the piano and the saxophone, so he's definitely incredibly musical because he's just been surrounded by it since birth.
Now, I understand that you also sang in choirs as well when you were quite young.
I did. I used to sing a lot. It was always a natural thing for me. I grew up, my father was a minister, so there was always a lot of hymns and choruses and things like that we used to sing in the car. I think if you're exposed to music, you know, from birth, really, it just becomes a language for you, which is a wonderful bonus. You know, I always feel sorry for people that haven't had that experience, and often, you know, they'll come to it and they're just amazed by, especially opera and classical music, when they've never heard anything like that, and they get to about 15 and then they might go and see their first opera or listen to their first symphony concert and they're completely blown away by it all, because it's just this new sound experience for them. So it's always great to try new things.
And was that sort of how it felt for you when you first came to see your first opera at 14?
Well, the only reason I came to opera really is because of my husband. I met him at school and he introduced me to, well, originally it was Gilbert and Sullivan, which I thought was incredibly highbrow in those days. And then he encouraged me to have singing lessons, and we bought our first opera season's ticket. We grew up in Geelong and we used to travel up on the train when I was about 15 to Opera Australia when they used to tour there. They still do, but they used to do some great seasons. I saw Pavarotti, I saw Joan Sutherland, Marilyn Horne, all these incredible singers singing at the Princess Theatre or the Palais when I was about 15. So at that point, you know, I just couldn't believe it. It was so fantastic.
You're on The Fool and the Opera on Joy 94.9, and that was a very beautiful track, sung by husband and wife, Peter Coleman Wright and Cheryl Barker. Really beautiful track that was performed when Music Aviva came, brought them to Melbourne for a performance at Hamer Hall. Now, the Cheryl Barker interview, the highlights will continue. And as I said before, this is only a snippet of the extended podcast, which we will be posting of the interview with Cheryl Barker on the blog site and the podcast site. It's joy.org.au/thefoolandtheopera. So now we're going to continue with the interview with Cheryl Barker. Let's talk a little bit more about camaraderie in singing. Now, you've sung with your husband, Peter Coleman Wright, so I imagine the camaraderie there would be quite strong.
There is a bit, yes. I mean, it's always wonderful to perform with him. It's a little bit like having your best friend on stage with you.
Do you get more nerves or more butterflies in the belly when you're singing opposite him?
No, I think I feel safer on stage when he's there. And, I mean, we also are concerned for each other as well, you know, how the other one's doing. I think there's no boundaries when you're singing with your partner. Of course, it doesn't happen very often. But, for example, when we did Tosca, you know, and I had to stab him, there was no boundaries there. Of course, I didn't really stab him.
No.
But it was great fun to play.
I'm sure it would, and I'm sure there's a lot of married women out there in the world who just look at you with envy.
I know. And I didn't just stab him once, I stabbed him a few times.
Did you? Good on you.
I really went for the kill. No, it was... That was a wonderful role, wonderful then to play with Peter Scarpia at one point, because he has to attempt to sort of rape me. You know, he could just throw me down and not worry about things. You know, often you meet somebody that you've never met before and you've got to either have a wonderful love scene with them or, you know, they have to jump on top of you or something like that, and you're always a little bit tentative about things like that. But when it's your partner, then it's, you know, you just go for it, really.
You mentioned the word safe a little bit before, and I've got a quote that I believe you've said, which says, opera is so safe these days, there's no risks taken.
Yes.
Do you still believe that?
Well, last night I went to see Lady Macbeth at Mtsensk, and there was plenty of risks taken in that.
Okay.
But I do think that things are getting a little bit homogenised. I think perhaps the recording world's become a little bit safe. Everybody wants perfection all the time, so people are just aiming for maybe a beautiful sound when they sing.
Mm.
And I think it's got to be much more than that. It's got to be come from the soul. It's got to, you know, you listen to all those old recordings, people like Maria Callas or Jussi Björling or Caballé even. They really went for it, and I much prefer to hear a live performance that's been recorded than to hear a studio recording, because they're way too perfect. I'd rather hear some flaws, but something dramatic. Everybody's afraid to make an ugly sound, or they're afraid to produce something that's not perfection. And for me, perfection is something that's real, not something that's just a fabricated, beautiful sound.
So from performance to performance, there will be slight variances or changes or differences just based on your emotion at that particular point in time?
Yeah, and I mean, I think that's what's so great about live performance, as opposed to sitting and listening to a recording, is that generally live performance, if it's done properly, is that it's a wonderful experience, and you're actually, as an audience member, you're sitting there and you're so involved with what's happening, you almost feel as if it's happening to you at the same time, whereas if there's not that communication or not that input by the performer, then you're not carried along with them. I think it's just something that you pick up subconsciously. Mm. You become incredibly engrossed in something. I mean, it's like when you watch a film that has truly great acting. You can differentiate between great acting and just reading the lines. And when it's great acting, you really feel for that character, and that's when the performer's done their job, I think.
Now, of course, as this show is for beginners of opera,
yeah.
What sort of operas or particular arias would you recommend to people who are trying to get into it?
Firstly, I would recommend, if they can, and if it's on, to go and see La Bohème. That's the opera that I would always recommend for anybody to go to first, because it's not too long, it's a great story, and it's got gorgeous music. I think any of the Puccini operas, any of the Verdi operas, something like Macbeth would be fantastic, or Traviata. Ones that have good stories that people can understand. I think sometimes they get a bit complicated. For Wagner, I mean, which is just unbelievably fantastic.
Mm.
You have to really have done your homework. You have to be familiar with the music, for my liking, because I think it's so rich and there's so much in it that if you'd never been to an opera before, you probably would think, what the dickens is going on? I would always recommend that perhaps you get a CD or a DVD these days. You can get some really wonderful ones. And watch it and listen to the music so that you're familiar with it. So that you can then just concentrate on what's going on stage. Often it's too rich an experience to take in one sitting. So if you've done your homework and you know the story, you can follow what's going on, it's not too difficult to understand, then go and see it, definitely.
Yes, and there is a fantastic DVD of you performing Madame Butterfly with, is it Netherlands Operas?
That's right, yes.
Yes, which is a wonderful little...
I've just come back from Paris from doing it over there in a production by Robert Wilson, which is very stylized. If anyone was getting a DVD, because that's on DVD as well, I would prefer to get Moffat's production, which is on DVD through the ABC, of Madame Butterfly, if a first-time opera goes to watch it. Because it's quite... Moffat's is a beautiful production. I think the one in Paris and the Netherlands, well, it's just a bit too stylized.
Yes, the blade is invisible, for starters.
Oh, there is no blade. It was my finger. Yeah. You know, people like it, and I think visually it looks beautiful, but for me there just was just a little bit... not enough emotion.
Right. Is it a little bit harder to sort of get the emotion because there are no sort of props in...
Incredibly difficult. And I hadn't done it for 6 years. I did it 6 years ago in the Netherlands, and then just a few weeks ago I was there doing it, and I'd completely forgotten the production. And what I found most frustrating was that I wasn't able to emote. I mean, it was almost like doing a ballet. Everything was choreographed. Every movement was choreographed. On a certain word, you had to do a certain hand gesture. Mm. So it was a lot to take on board in a very short rehearsal time that I had.
Let's quickly just... talk a little bit more about the production with Moffat Oxenbould. Was it easier than to slip into the kimono, I suppose, with Moffat Oxenbould's production?
Well, it was, because for me that's the most beautiful production of any that I've ever done. And I completely adore Moffat. I think he's so respectful of the artists. He's got a wonderful eye. He's incredibly detailed and clear. And it really was just like... coming home to something. It's like putting on a really comfortable pair of slippers, or when you've done a production, you've gone away, you've done other things, and then you suddenly come back to this production that you just love and that you helped to create in the first place. And so this time I have just absolutely adored it. It was just like suddenly being let off the leash, being back in this production.
I think that there are many, many people who are just so glad that you've come back home to perform Chocho San as well. What other things can we expect from you coming in the future?
Later this year, I'm doing Manon Lescaut in Sydney.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the end of the year, I'm doing Tosca for Opera Australia and something else next year, which I don't think I'm allowed to say because it's not been announced.
Ooh. Well, best of luck at Bandelier.
Thank you. I'm so looking forward to it. I can't wait. My parents are coming too, so that'll be nice.
Oh, fantastic. All right, well, thank you for your time on the show today, Cheryl.
A pleasure. Lovely to speak to you.
You're on The Fool and the Opera on Joy 94.9. Now, before we go, I'm going to give you your taste of a jazz track. It is Madame Butterfly, Un Bel Diva Dreamo, but it's done by the Massimo Faro Trio, and you'll just get a little taste of it, and then we will say goodbye. That is all the time that we've had today. Well, that's all the time we've got for today. Thank you so much for joining us today. Of course, you can have a listen to the extended version of the podcast of the interview with Cheryl Barker. It will be posted up this week, so check it out, joy.org.au/thefoolandtheopera. We'll also do a lot of podcasts, blog posts, and just keep you up to date with what's happening in the opera world around Australia. Now, thank you very much again for joining me. Coming up next is Kirsty and Katie with Bent Notes, so it's definitely worth sticking around for, because it's going to be a great little night of jazz. And as we were talking about, you know, civil rights before and all that sort of stuff, I'd say that jazz is probably one of the most significant contributions that has been given to us from the African-American community. So thank you to them for that. Now, stick around for an excellent show, and I will see you next week. Same Fledermaus time, same Fledermaus channel.
Thanks for listening to the Joycast of The Fool and the Opera from Joy 94.9 Community Radio. You can find more Joycasts and the program blog at joy.org.au/thefoolandtheopera. The Fool in the Opera is produced by Dan Vo and Jed Gilbert, thanks to the support of Joy's sponsors and members. Please help support it by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.